Today on The Grave Talks, the ghosts of the Old Park Hotel. Dan and Connie LaFave met through their interest in the paranormal. They've explored and investigated numerous locations over the years, but never intended to buy a haunted building. That interest in the paranormal led them to the Old Park Hotel in Ballinger, Texas. The hotel was built around 1886 and had also been a brothel, a boarding house, and it might have even been a school at one time. They had heard it was a haunted location, and while they were there, the owner told them it was for sale. They entertained the idea of buying it, but after several tragic life events, the last thing on their mind was the hotel. Months later, the owners of the building contacted them and told Dan that, quote, "The spirits really want you and Connie to have the building." Soon they became the newest owners of the Old Park Hotel. From day one, Dan and Connie have had experiences in the hotel, and it has never let up. It's said that more than 30 spirits reside in the building. Today on The Grave Talks, the ghosts of the Old Park Hotel with owner Dan LaFave. I am very interested in your story because I was reading about the Old Park Hotel, and then I started reading about you and your wife, Connie. And you two have a definite interest in history with the paranormal. So where did that begin for you? Was it something when you were a kid?
It honestly did begin as a kid. And I'll tell you in retrospect what that was like. Growing up, you know, I'm going to kind of age myself here. I had black and white television, and back in the day had those old tape recorders, not the digital kind, you know, the analog kind. And I remember one time my mom got me a tape recorder for my birthday. Couldn't think of what else to get me and decided to get that. So I'm out in the living room just playing around with this recorder, taping myself, playing it back, taping myself, playing it back, just being a kid, doing these fun things. And one day there was like other voices on the tape recorder. And I remember as a kid, I was like, I had no clue what I was listening to or what I was hearing, but there were like little replies coming through on the recorder. And it wasn't anything like scary or evil. It was just other people. And I just never put two and two together till later on. And realistically, I got into the paranormal more, I want to say about 33 years ago is when I really got into it. And what happened was I was active duty Air Force. I worked in top secret sites all across the United States and, of course, had a clearance. And we go out to these sites, and I worked basically 2 to 11, and then I worked graveyard shifts, which are the late shifts. And we just kind of revolved back and forth. Well, going out to these different posts, and the base was really big that I was at when this one occurrence happened, it was really the same thing over and over and over. You just kind of went through the same setup each time, except that this one particular night went out to this area called Tango 11. And this particular night, the alarms went off. And that was something that really grabbed me because we responded and we actually saw a woman walking outside one of our areas that she was the one that tripped the alarm. And I've actually talked about that on an episode of Paranormal 911, opened up season 2 with that episode, talking about all the craziness of what we encountered with her. And that's what really got me going, because back then it wasn't talked about as far as the paranormal. I didn't really even know what it was. I'm sure you remember back, it used to be called the supernatural. It wasn't even called paranormal. And then one day the paranormal pops up, coining the term. And that's when I started reading books based on my experience that I had. And that's a that was a really crazy experience, everything that we encountered with her. And that's realistically what got me going. Started investigating the paranormal solo at that point, because me and my wife were not together at that when that occurred. And I started just kind of reaching out. And this was way before the days of the computer, the days of the internet. You just didn't really know where to find the information. You didn't know where to find paranormal. I'd go to the bookstores as a kid, and they had all these paranormal books stuck back in the occult section.
Right. Is where you would find them, in the occult section.
And people would look at you really strange if you walk back there and you just pick up books and you start reading, and everybody just kind of walk by you and give you these looks, you know. And that's where I got a lot of my information over the years. I just collected a lot of books. I did a lot of reading. Initially, I read a lot of stuff about the Warrens, a lot of stuff about Hans Holzer. And things just kind of took off from there. And eventually led into joining some teams. And one of the first teams I joined was actually a team out of San Antonio, and we got together and started investigating a lot of stories going on around San Antonio. And eventually we popped up on the news. All the news reporters were coming looking for us, because this was like the new thing. And this was before Ghost Hunters, because Ghost Hunters came out in 2004. So we were doing this well before that, and popping up on the news and wondering one day if the paranormal was going to jump out. And of course, when Ghost Hunters first aired in 2004, that really got people going.
And I think it made it easier to talk about, you know, more people were into it.
It did, because the term, if you talked about ghosts, you talk about spirits way back in the day, it was a taboo subject. A lot of people would raise their eyes and sometimes walk away from you. But one thing I found interesting back then, and I still find it interesting, is when you open up these discussions, all of a sudden you find out how many people actually have occurrences going on, you know, in their homes and businesses. Sometimes they're just afraid to talk about these experiences because they don't know how people are going to react to them. Now it's a lot more common. People get a more positive reaction, but back in the day, it was totally different. Sometimes people looked at you and walked away because they thought you were a crazy person or something, mm-hmm. you know?
Because mm-hmm. I've talked about that on this show before because, I grew up in a haunted house and I hated telling anybody that. Yes. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're judged anyway. But then, you know, being in a little town, and I was a girl who said she lived in a haunted house. So that's the last thing I wanted anyone to know.
Exactly. And to this day, I've studied, like, when you look at certain things like the boogeyman, for instance, these little stigmas that have existed in society. As kids, we're told that these are our imagination. And if you look at it a lot deeper, you know, a lot of kids have a lot of paranormal experiences. And of course, I did, you did, a lot of people have had them. And we see things, we hear things, you know, the famous closet, something coming out of the dark closet. And a lot of times back then, we were put down, we were told that it was just our imagination. You know, go back to bed, you're just dreaming, or something like that. Who's to say if we really were dreaming or not, mm-hmm. you know, or if we weren't really seeing, really experiencing things, if something was reaching out to us. So I kind of found that interesting.
So at some point you started your own paranormal group then?
I was on about five different paranormal teams. The first team was in San Antonio, and then I joined another team as a lead researcher. And when I joined the other team, it was called After Dark Paranormal. It was a friend of mine who was in law enforcement, because a lot of my friends are in law enforcement. And people would be surprised how many people professional law enforcement officers are actually studying the paranormal. There's quite a few of them. Back in the day, that was another thing. Law enforcement was afraid to put their names on the lines based on what they were seeing, what they were experiencing. Because a lot of times police officers would chase somebody down a street into an alley, and all of a sudden that person would disappear. Or they'd be chasing a phantom vehicle or something. It didn't always happen, but every once in a while they had mysterious things. So my friend Eddie Hill out of San Antonio, still a very good friend of mine, we've known each other for years, had a lot of experiences. He formed a team, After Dark Paranormal, and I became a lead researcher on that team. And on that team is when I actually met my wife, Connie, because different people were joining our team. And one day we get her name and I call her and say, you know, you want to come join us, which is interesting because I met my wife through the paranormal, which I kind of find funny now, but it's a very serious thing because you develop these long-term relationships having to do with the paranormal. And that's how I met Connie, because she had an interest in the paranormal and eventually came out with us and became one of our researchers on the team. And then, of course, we got to know each other better and eventually got married. And after that, we joined back in the day, Ghost Hunters. In the beginning, I don't know if they have them anymore, but they had what are called TAPS family member teams all around the country, because TAPS was their network. And they only had so many teams in each state. And Texas at the time, I believe, had only two or three TAPS family member teams. And we actually joined one of those teams. And another friend of mine that was on the team at the time, he wasn't on the team very long, but his name was Brett Kling. And him and his brother branched off and did their own thing and actually had the television show Ghost Lab for a while on Discovery. But that's how I got to know Brad. So you develop these relationships mm-hmm. as you go along, and you keep these relationships as you go along. And, you know, I still bounce a lot of things off of Brad. He comes out to the hotel a lot. And what happened also, we weren't on that team for too long, I think probably about 6 months. But then my wife was a high school teacher. She got a job down in deep South Texas. So we had to move. We had to pluck everything up and move down in Harlingen, Texas, which was right off the Texas-Mexico border. And I had to work in Brownsville, which was actually right on the border. And I had to drive 30 miles every day to go to work and go to school because I was finishing up degrees at the time. And what was funny was my university that I was at was an old Texas fort that had been turned into a university. And it actually had a morgue, which was one of the buildings that was on campus. And people were actually seeing all sorts of ghosts on campus. So I found that to be really, really interesting. And we formed our team at the time was Graveyard Shift Paranormal Investigations. And we got up to about 13 members at the time. We started doing stuff all up and down the Texas-Mexico border. Went out with different television stations like Telemundo and various other stations, and which was funny because a lot of times those reporters are very skeptical. But as soon as they came out on the investigations with you, things would happen to them, like stuff would fly out of their hands while they were filming us, and their eyes would get real big. And we just started doing a lot of client investigations. And I think at the time we were doing about 4 investigations a month. I really don't know how we handled everything. It was looking back at it, but that just, you know, one thing kind of led to one area, and then that area led to another area. And then of course, eventually we ended up with the Old Park Hotel.
It looks like when you drive by, number one, I wouldn't really think of it as a hotel, but it does say hotel on the top. But it just gives off a creepy vibe just from the pictures.
Yeah, it is very creepy in there. Walking around alone in there, especially because it's almost 11,000 square feet.
Oh, that's big.
It is big, yeah. If you count all the bathrooms in the building, the ones that are working and not working, Because we have several that do work, but a lot of them in the back don't. It's on a different plumbing line. I think we're looking at like 41 rooms altogether, if you count everything.
Now, before you and Connie bought the hotel, you started writing books on the paranormal, correct?
Yes, I did. 2012, my first book was honestly pretty funny how it came along. I had several friends of mine that were constantly asking me questions about the paranormal. I used to do a lot of different conferences. I used to sit in front of doctors, lawyers, meetings, all these serious people, and do these conferences all over the place while we were down in South Texas. And eventually, I had a friend one time that was on our team. He came over to our house one time and we were talking, and he was trying to find out as many things as he could about the paranormal. And he starts looking at my huge, vast library of paranormal books. And he starts asking me which books can help him in this area, which books can help him in that area. So pretty soon I shoved about 7 or 8 books in his hands. And he's just walking out with this huge, huge collection of books. Well, that gave me the idea at the time that, you know, I need to write my first book and kind of put things out of all these books that are talked about into one book. And that first book I came out was, which was called Shadow of the Ghost Hunter in 2012. And I put a lot of time into that book. I talk about a lot of theories. I talk a lot about a lot of concepts. And that book came out in 2012, and it was very popular. A lot of people were buying that at the time. I was going to a lot of paracons and things at the time. And that book, I really took a lot of pride in writing. And then, of course, you know, an author never really stops. You continue the journey. So my wife, she was like, why don't you write a book about talking about the locations that we've been to in Texas and other locations? So I came up with the idea for the second book, which is called The Supernatural, Texas and the Old West, the mysterious real hauntings, basically. That book is a very popular book as well, because it describes a lot of these locations that we went to with the histories and also what we encountered. So a lot of people love reading that. And I think I came out of that book around 2014, 2013. I don't even remember. And then, of course, we bought the hotel. And when we bought the hotel, I eventually wrote one that was called The Spirits of the Old Park, which was when we were gathering information. And as we got more information and people were having more experiences, I came out with my most recent book, which was not too long ago, which is called Fear is Just a Word. And this book I love because this book has a lot of accounts that are directly written by other people that have been in the hotel, that have experienced things. So it explores fear, and it explores the experiences of the old park, and it just goes deeper and deeper.
See, I want to read that one because that is something that might help me, because I do get really afraid of things. like if I was to spend the night at the Old Park Hotel, I would be wide awake, nervous all night long, just because I'm afraid.
You wouldn't be the first. I'll throw
good,
something
not
at
alone.
You. I don't know if you know the Ghost Brothers or not. Have you ever met them?
No, I have not.
Okay, I'll tell you a little funny gist. We've, of course, did different television shows. And one of the shows we did was Fright Club with Jack Osborne and the Ghost Brothers. Well, when we filmed that show, it was during COVID, which meant that the film crews were not going out to locations to actually film. So they got the idea that we're going to do everything through Skype. And the producers would come through Skype. Everybody would come through Skype. So we filmed from the old park, just me and Connie talking to them. Well, we sent them a lot of evidence, a lot of various clips, things that have been collected, a lot of scary stuff. They chose one clip which showed a a door slamming in one of our rooms at the top of the stairs. And that particular day, I was all by myself. I was finishing painting in another room, which is our brothel room, or red black room. And that was one of those days that I was telling you about, when you show up, you don't know how you're going to feel. And that particular day, it was overcast outside. It was very gloomy. It was very dark. I needed to get that room done because we had bookings coming up. And I didn't want to have a room sitting there half painted, you know, half done. So I showed up that day with the premise to get everything done in that room. That particular day, I heard talking and walking out in the hallway just constantly. And I got so nervous that I actually had to turn on a radio in the room just so I wouldn't hear the noises outside. Because every time I kept hearing it, I go out and investigate. Nobody out there. I go look out front. There's nobody out there. There's no cars. Go back to painting. About 5 minutes later, it would start again. Eventually, I remembered that I had surveillance cameras, because we have about four cameras in the hotel that look down the hall. And I got the idea that, okay, this time I'm not going to walk out, because every time I walked out, it would stop. It would get completely quiet again. This time I got the notion that if it starts up again, I'm going to tag into my camera and just sit here in the room with the door closed and watch what happens. Well, when I did that, about 8 minutes, the talking started again, the movement starts. So I start the camera up. About 8 or 9 minutes goes by and there's nothing happening. I'm just sitting there in the room looking at my phone, looking at the video footage, which is, you know, only a few feet from me, but it's outside in the hallway and I have the door closed. At that moment, that door slammed shut so hard it shook the whole second floor of the hotel building. And that is a huge building to cause that kind of a vibration from a door slamming. I tried to recreate it. I couldn't even recreate, you know, the hardness of it slamming. I'm surprised it didn't break the door as it slammed so hard. But what I was going to tell you was the Ghost Brothers, Jawan, when we did the show, we talked about the door, and they used the footage of the door slamming and me walking out in the hallway and looking at it, looking all crazy, looking all like freaked out, trying to figure out what had happened. Well, the footage doesn't do it justice, because the speaker on the camera didn't pick up the loudness of how hard that door slammed, first of all. And second of all, a camera isn't going to show you the emotions that you feel.
Oh, right.
You know, when it happens. And Jack Osborne and Dalen and Juwan and Marcus were like, wow, that's really scary. And talking about the story of the Oak Park. Well, I told him, I said, one of these days, I said, you guys are probably going to come back for real, and you're going to actually stay overnight here in this hotel. And they didn't really make a comment, which was kind of funny. Recently, we had an event with them, I want to say about 3-4 months ago, and they came to stay overnight. It was their event. And they came in really late the night before. They came in around 12:30 at night. The event was the next day. They were super, super tired. So I didn't say anything to them. I said, why don't you guys just go to bed? We'll talk in the morning. Hopefully you'll be all energized when we get up to do everything tomorrow. So they go to bed. They didn't share any ghost stories, didn't tell them anything about what rooms they're in. Well, the room that Jawan was sleeping in was the same room that door slammed that we talked about on Fright Club, except he didn't know. That morning, me and Connie got up really early. We were the first up. It was probably about 7:30. We went to the kitchen and we made some coffee, and then we went to our presentation hangout room. And we're just sitting there drinking coffee, and all of a sudden we hear somebody get up really fast upstairs, and they come down the steps, because, you know, they're wooden steps. You can hear everybody moving around. And right through the door, Jawan comes in with the straightest look on his face, and he sits down on the couch right across from us with this very serious look, and he goes, I think my room is really haunted. And I went, what? He goes, I think my room is really haunted. somebody grabbed my leg last night while I was laying in bed.
Oh.
And then I found out later that Daylin was sleeping in the room next to him. I found out that Daylin had a hard time sleeping the whole night. He couldn't get into a decent sleep. They weren't really talking. They were just, you know, resting. But I guess Daylin was nervous too. So like you said, that feeling, you know, gets a lot of people in the hotel.
You know, this is reassuring to me that I, that there's other people, because it's, you know, it's something that I'm fascinated by, but at the same time, it does scare me, but then there's a respect for it as well. Like, if you want me out of here, I have no problem leaving.
We have a lot of people that are touched at the hotel. And when I say touched, they're not just touched. It's just like another person in the room walking up, you know, to your bed and grabbing your arm or grabbing your leg. Or if you're standing there, you feel a hand come up behind and go up on your shoulder. They like to tap people on the shoulders a lot of times. So like if you're standing there watching something, it's just like somebody's coming up behind you and tapping on your shoulder to get your attention.
How then did you and your wife end up buying this hotel from, what, 1886 or something like that in
right.
Ballinger, Texas? How did you end up
getting that? That is a crazy story, because here we are 7 years later. We just hit our 7th year anniversary about a two months ago. What happened was, first of all, I will tell you that a lot of people that I think own these haunted buildings, historic buildings, a lot of times you would think they're out there looking to buy these buildings or looking around to find something. That's really not the case. A lot of times I feel like these buildings are out looking for people to buy them. And that's the way our story happened. In 2015, we were moving around again, and we were down in South Texas. Well, I finished up a lot of my school stuff, but I was having a hard time finding a job down there, because, you know, it wasn't a huge area for economic, you know, prosperity, I guess, jobs and things. So I told Connie, I said, we're probably going to have to move so I can have a good shot at getting a job. And now I'm a high school teacher, just like she is. We talked about at the time, we were like, well, we're going to move back to San Antonio. We're going to move Austin, Dallas, Houston. And I looked at Connie and I said, no. I said, let's go back to West Texas. Let's go back to where you were born. And I still remember, in this funny part, my wife looked at me with this really funny look. And she's like, why? And I was like, West Texas. And she's like, why? There's nothing there. And I said, exactly. I said, let's go for something different. Let's go out. I said, San Anselmo, Texas, it's a little over 100,000 people. I said, let's go see if we can move up there. So we moved here, and this was back in 2013. And I have to admit, it was an adventure, because when I moved up to West Texas, I'd already explored all around Texas, but I had not explored West Texas. So I knew nothing about West Texas. And like we said before, Texas is a huge state. There's a lot of things in it. But if you're not living in a certain area, you really don't know about that other area. So the first thing I did when we got up here was I started researching. I started looking at books. I started talking to people. I started looking at newspaper articles. I was trying to find out what haunted locations were up here. And in 2015, right before Halloween, I found this 6-page news story, very big news story, talking about the old park building. And at the time, it was an antique store, a very big antique store. So it was just full of antiques. And they had a lot of pictures in the article, which really intrigued me. And they also talked a lot about the ghost stories, about the various things. So I could not wait to come up and see this building. I told Connie, I said, we need to go to Ballinger, which is like, it's only about 35 miles from San Angelo where we live. I said, we need to go explore this building. So I contacted the owner that right after I read that story. And the funny part is the owner blew me off like you won't believe. Even though we had a great exchange, I introduced myself. I told her who I was, how professionally we do things. I just was interested in her building. I just wanted to walk through it, see what I felt, see if I picked up on anything. The owner, that story was so popular because, again, it was right before Halloween. Everybody and their cats and dogs wanted to come see the building. And she was already blown off by the whole thing. She didn't want like a big old circus attraction. It's the way that she put it. So she blew me off. We exchanged information. I thought, seriously, at the time, I thought, I'm never going to hear from her again. I'm never going to see this building. Those were my thoughts. And lo and behold, a month later, after we had that exchange, maybe a little over a month, she calls me out of the blue. And she goes, Dan, why don't you and Connie come up here? She goes, I'm up here. I said, it's a perfect day. I said, why don't you come up and see the building? Well, the scariest thing about that perfect day was it wasn't a perfect day. It was like the gloomiest, stormiest, foggiest, misty day that you could ever imagine going to see a haunted building. And we drove up to the building. And I have to admit, when we came around the corner, because I was using GPS, trying to figure out where it was at, the building just kind of loomed at us. And I had a feeling like right away that somebody was up on the balcony looking at us. And we pulled up and I was almost looking at my wife like, do we really want to go in there? That was the first thought that I had. And we walked around inside and I didn't get grabbed by anything, but from the moment we walked in the front door, I just felt watched. And that's a feeling that a lot of people get when they walk into a building. The moment they come in, you just feel like you're being watched by lots of people, like they're just screening you. And I didn't hear anything either, but I just felt like they were constantly behind us while we were walking from room to room to room. The owner stayed downstairs, and eventually we walked down the stairs. And the first thing the owner said was, what do you think about the building? And I said, this is amazing. I said, it's an 1800s building. I said, I love it just for the fact that it's old. And I said, I know there is something here. I said, I can't put my finger on it yet, but I know there is something here. And the first thing she said was that, yeah, she goes, they're here. She says, at least 30 of them. And I went, 30? And she goes, yeah, there's 30 spirits here. And I looked her in the face and I was like, are you serious? And I thought she was going to laugh or something. And she just gave me this very serious look back. And she goes, yeah. She goes, at least there's 30 spirits here. And so I wasn't quite sure what to make of that. And then the second thing she said was, she goes, you know, the building's for sale. And I looked back at my wife with this look, and my wife looked back and my wife was like, we're not doing this today.
This was not in the plans.
She's like, this isn't going to happen. It's like, you just invited me to come up here and look at this building. She was like, this isn't going to happen. And, you know, realistically, that's the funny part of it. You're put into these spots where you start to think about it, but realistically, it's about as far as you can throw a football. You're just not going to, you're not going to get to that point realistically. So the first offer she made us was for the building and all the antiques. It was just full of antiques, a lot of old stuff. That offer was like, no way, you know? So we literally walked out the door. Again, I was like, this isn't ever going to happen. And at that point, that's when we hit a really bad spot. And you never think that these things are going to happen, but I end up losing my mother was with us that day when we went there the first time. She was up visiting and she was from Germany. She was in her 70s. If you've ever met a German woman, an old German woman, they're very independent. You know, they just don't tell you when they're not feeling good. They just do everything. And that's the way my mom was. Well, my mom was already having trouble moving around when she came up for that visit. So I knew she was slowing down. I knew things were happening. She lived in San Antonio, so we're looking to move her up to San Angelo to live with us so that she could be closer to us. Well, I was an only child too, which made things a little more difficult. When we left that hotel that day, another 2 months went by, and my mother ends up in the hospital, ends up in ICU, and eventually gets out of ICU, goes through a bunch of things, and we get her moved up to San Angelo, but then we lost her right after we moved her into our house. One day she just passed away. There was nothing we could do about it.
I am really sorry. Yeah,
it was a really bad time. It was just her heart. You know, when the heart goes, it goes. There's nothing you can do about it. So it was really, really sad. And then a month later, right after we lose my mom, my wife was adopted. So my wife had two mothers. She had her adopted mother, and then she had her natural mother, who she met when she was 25 and got to know her mother really well and was developing a really good relationship with her. Well, then her real mother goes in for what was supposed to be a normal surgical procedure. I forget what she was having done, but it was supposed to be normal, but everything imaginable that could have gone wrong went wrong during the surgery. And she ended up getting infected inside, you know. Mm-hmm. And when a person gets infected, I forget the term they use for it, it starts killing the organs and everything. So we lost her.
Oh my gosh.
Which was a horrible shock. And then a month later after that, you can imagine our heads are spinning at this moment. We're just trying to keep ourselves from going into depression. A month after that, we lose a brother-in-law who's only in his 30s, was in the army and everything, and he has a heart attack out of the blue. And we went to his funeral. You're talking three relatives, like one after the other. So the last thing on our minds was the hotel, you know?
Right.
I mean, there wasn't anything else on our minds.
No, you're just trying to make it through day to day at that point.
Right. We're just wondering what else is going to happen. You know, it was like that. And then about 5 months after he passed away, it was like July, and out of the blue, Jeanette, the owner, calls me again. I wasn't even thinking hotel. It was already out of my mind. She calls me and she goes, "You know, Dan," she goes, "the spirits really want you and Connie to have this hotel." And the way she said that day, it really blew me away. I was like, "The spirits really want us to have this?" And she's like, the word she was using, she was like, "The spirits chose you and Connie. And I like the ideas that you have." She was just throwing all these things. And she said that a lot of other people had made offers and she had turned down the offers, and she liked what we had in mind for the hotel to bring it back to life, where the words that we used and the words that she used. And here we are 7 years later. I never imagined it would happen. I never imagined the hotel would be as popular as it is with all its paranormal stories. But from day one, we bought the hotel, we started doing work on it, things started happening from day one. And those things have never let up. Like I was telling you earlier, you just don't know what to expect in there. And me and my wife constantly have things happen to us. I had some crazy experiences happen just a few weeks ago to me again. Groups come in all the time. Sometimes they get things, sometimes they don't. But when they do get things, it's amazing. It's just been an amazing journey.
And you don't rent that out as a hotel.
No, we don't.
It's only for paranormal investigations and tours and ghost hunts and things like that, correct?
Exactly. We only use the hotel name in the name to honor what it used to be.
And it used to be quite a few different things throughout its, because it was originally built as a hotel, correct?
Correct. It was actually built originally as a bunking house for railroad workers. Because Ballinger got formed by the Santa Fe Gulf and Colorado Railroad Company, which was going across Texas at the time. And back in the day, if you were a town that you had an idea that the railroad might come through, you wanted to do everything you could to try to get that railroad to come through. It's just like getting a highway to come through your town now. is you want the business. There was a county seat north of Ballinger, basically was not called Ballinger in the beginning. It was called Hutchins. And the main street that goes right by our hotel is actually called Hutchins because it's the main highway. But when it comes through town, the locals just use the name Hutchins. If you don't know the past history, you have no clue what Hutchins is or what it means. It means the previous settlement. Old Runnels City used to be the county seat. Now Ballinger is the county seat, but way back then, Runnels City was the county seat. And what happened is the railroad went there first, and those people thought they had it in the bag, and Old Runnels City sat about 9 or 10 miles north of us. And those people really didn't try hard enough. And next thing you know, the railroad decides to come down to this little settlement of Hutchins, which sits on the Colorado River. And railroads like towns that sat on rivers. I think that was the main idea. And they were like, we're going to turn this little settlement into a big city. And little Ballinger now only has 3,000 people. But back in the day, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people. They really grew that place.
I was also reading like it was used as a boarding house and a restaurant, a brothel.
It started when people stand in front of the building, when you look at a picture of the building, the first thing that strikes you, if you don't know any history, the building looks very strange. The reason why is it started off at the two-story white house. Which basically is the right part of the building. So if you're standing there, you can actually see the unevenness of when they started adding things because they did a pretty good job putting it all together. But, you know, it's not one unit. It's basically three units that took place over time, three transitions. The first house is said to have already been sitting there pre 1886. That's what a lot of historians are telling us. So that's one of the reasons why we use the word circa, because we don't know how old the original house really is. The original house could easily be older than 1886, or it could be a little bit after 1886. We don't know exactly. The other half of our building, the part that goes to the left, that's next to the house, that part was actually rolled in from Runnels City, because what happened is when the railroad went to Runnels City, they told all those people, they said, we're going to help you bring all your stuff here. We're going to give you lots for free in the new Ballinger. And guess what? All those people pulled up and moved their buildings. And historians are telling us that the other half of our building was either rolled in as one unit or possibly in sections on logs with mules, and then was attached to the house. So there's a possibility that part could even be older than the house.
When you think about all the people who have come in and out of there over the years, do you feel like there are certain spirits that seem consistent? Like you're getting the same experience. You feel like, you know, maybe it's, you know, someone who stayed there for a while, or someone who was maybe injured there or even died there. I would assume that happened.
There have been lots of people over time, because again, it wasn't just the old Park Hotel. It was actually found out it was four other hotels. It became the Park Hotel in 1920 officially. The family that owned it, which was the same family that we bought the hotel from, you know, she was a descendant of the Keel family. Mr. Keel bought it in 1922, and they did a lot of work on the hotel, a lot of modifications. They knew a lot of history, but they only knew about 100 years of history. When we bought the building, all she could really tell us was all that history. She didn't know anything about the previous history. So we started digging up all the other history, start talking to everybody, finding old pictures, going to the courthouse. And we found out there was at least another 40 years of history, you know, before her family took it over. And the other hotels that it was the Seacrest Hotel. It was the Three Sisters Hotel. It was the Royal Hotel. And then it became the Park Hotel. And it was also two brothels during that time period. It was a brothel early on, and there was a brothel later around World War II, because there was an old World War II base right outside town. So I think, and that's where they got the idea, because military guys, you know, go off and do their thing. And what's funny about the brothels is every old West town had them. Ballinger had them. There's still people in town. The proper church people, they're like, this town never had brothels. I'm like, yes, it did. And I'm like, it had brothels to go with the 13 saloons that were here.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it was a happening place. It had a lot of things going on, had a lot of outlaws running through town. There's lots of spirits there. A lot of the girls are still there. A lot of the women, a lot of cowboys that are spotted. There's a lot of women that are spotted. There's a lot of kids that are spotted. I do think after 7 years of all the activities, I'm beginning to think that she might've been right about the 30 spirits. Cause I've seen a lot and I've experienced a lot, and other people have just seen multiple apparitions. So I think that possibility does exist.
That wraps up part one of our conversation about the Old Park Hotel. In part two, we'll talk about the haunted doll room, the spirit of a little boy, and more paranormal encounters. If you'd like information on tours, ghost hunts, overnight investigations, and the history of the hotel, visit oldparkhotel.com. That's old spelled O-L-D-E. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and try it 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks so much for listening.